Hey, this is the Dr. Friday Show. If you want to join the show, you can at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. You're going to want to open the phone lines. And we're talking today about my favorite subject, which is obviously taxes and anything to do with basically money. There's not been a lot of tax changes, as we know. Many of you were under extension until 6/17, and that's already passed. So hopefully you filed extensions. That way you're good until October for individuals, September for businesses, and you'll be able to then, you know, make sure everything is filed and done properly. I had an interesting question that came in the email bag, and it was, I thought it was interesting because it was referred to as phantom income. And a lot of, there's been some controversy a little bit on what is phantom income and should I have to pay taxes on phantom income? And for anyone that's actually part of a sub S corporation or a 1065 partnership or LLC, you probably know we call it pass through, but it is income that you're going to want to, you will pay tax on, right? So if a business you've invested in as a partner and you make money, but maybe they can't distribute it. So let's say you own 10% and they make $100,000. So theoretically, your K-1 could come to you with a $10,000 profit, but maybe the money's tied up in inventory or equipment. So it's not actually tangible. Therefore, no distribution can be done of that $10,000 of profit. And so you will pay tax on that $10,000, even though it's not in your pocket. So that's considered phantom income. And then it adds to your basis. And then later, if there's a distribution, you may not have to pay tax on all of it because some of it may be distributed later from prior profits. But the question came down was, should I have to pay tax on phantom income? It's not income. I do my taxes on the cash basis. Therefore, why am I paying tax on money I didn't receive? And that is because the business that you invested in did make a profit. They did not make a profit that could be distributed, but it was a profit, even on the cash or accrual basis. And the business could be doing it on the accrual basis, even though you do your taxes on the cash basis. So there are some numbers or some court cases and things coming through. One individual is in a tax court situation where they are arguing the point, and their numbers are much larger. It was like, I don't know, $500,000 pass through, and they never received a dollar of it. Therefore, they're saying they shouldn't be held responsible for paying taxes on it. But it's not a C corporation, right? We all know with a C corporation, the corporation pays taxes, and then when they distribute, the individuals pay taxes, and it's double tax, which is what we all try to avoid in life. And so the next thing you have is the individual that has passed through, which is a sub S corporation and or LLC or partnership, depending on it's a hybrid. So it could be taxed in a couple different directions, but all of them do a pass through of profits from said investment to the shareholders or members or partners. And so that is, and again, it does get added to basis. So later, if the business sells and you've already paid tax on the money that's in the basis, you will eventually get that money back. Or if you have big losses, then you know, you pay tax. So that added, so that will give you the ability. You can't take a loss on a business, a partnership, or any pass-through that exceeds your original basis. So that is an important thing. So you don't, and that's something I have seen a lot of people do. And this really got changed probably back in 17, 18 when basis actually started being reported on the K-1s so that people could see, hey, my basis is a negative and now I've got a loss. Now, unless you have a personal guarantee down on some of these, otherwise that loss is not yours. You didn't physically lose that money. The company lost it and it's passing through to you, but it is only a pass-through. You cannot deduct that money off of your personal tax return unless you physically have a loss or you're held liable for that loss if the company was to go under. And that's a really big and important question because, again, I have seen many people that have taken losses to offset gains and then, you know, obviously IRS comes back and they review these returns and they go, well, I've got a K-1 with a loss, but your basis was already negative before that, you cannot claim that loss. So if you've got questions, maybe you're doing your taxes or you're looking at, you know, many of us are still on extension for 2023. Or you're working, it's 6 months almost through 2024, and maybe you have had some sales of real estate, be that primary or rental, or you've invested into something that has actually now distributed income. If you've got questions, you can join the show at 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986. Taking your calls, talking about what we have as far as what may be affecting your taxes. I know I have a large number of people that have taken up Uber or Lyft, doing you know, side jobs that way, which are considered self-employment, which does mean that you have the ability to deduct some expenses against those jobs. Of course, for Uber and Lyft, the biggest thing is your miles. But keep in mind, there has been a number of audits done by the IRS on Uber drivers because people are overstating miles that they can't justify. Doesn't mean that they're not right or wrong, but if you can't justify the number on your tax return, I don't suggest putting it down. So if you are using Mileage IQ, I mean, Uber and Lyft both present a number that they have paid by the miles that's been tracked from their aspect of payment. But many times there is some return. Like, for example, I flew in last week and I took an Uber from the airport down to Brentwood, and that driver was going back up to the airport. He wasn't picking up a load because there or an individual, apparently there wasn't something. So he said he was just going to head back up to the airport. Now that would be business miles because he was returning back to pick up another driver. He wasn't stopping. He wasn't going by home. He wasn't doing anything for personal reasons. And if some ride came available on his way between Brentwood and the airport, I'm sure he would have picked that person up. But that's the kind of thing that would not have been most likely tracked by Uber because he was not on their clock. But if you drive to, from home to your first pickup is not, that is commuting. That's to your first job. So wherever your first pickup is your actual start of your miles. And if you were to stop and do the grocery store or pick up a child from school or daycare or whatever, any of those miles commuted in there are not business miles. So again, having something like Mileage IQ that shows every stop and every start and has a log is a great idea for any of my drivers, even self-employed individuals. If you're using miles, have a chart that shows where you stopped, where you started. I mean, and again, any individual that has a business and your business requires you to go to one location, home to that one location is never going to be business miles. For example, my office is in Brentwood. I live in Spring Hill. So when I drive from Spring Hill to Brentwood, I can't deduct those miles, even though I have a home office and a business office. I meet my clients at that office and I choose to have a home office. And so therefore my real office is in Brentwood. So my home to business is commuting. From that point on, if I were to go to lunch and meet a client, if I was to drive out to someone's office, meet some other person, all of those would be legitimate miles for business. But make sure you are tracking that details. And it does add up every time you go to the bank, every time you have to go pick up supplies, office supplies, whatever. If you are a person that has to run and do those kind of situations, then it's important that you have that information at your fingertips and you know how many miles, because it's 65 cents a mile. That is pretty darn sweet. Even for all of us that might drive vehicles that are not as auto efficient as or petrol efficient as others. So again, if you want to join the show, you can 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. I got another letter here in the email, and they're just wanting to know if the deadlines for 2024 are any different than the deadlines for 2023, and I'm assuming they mean tax filing deadlines. It doesn't look like it in 2024. It looks like April 15th will be tax day again in 2025. as far as I can tell. So we'll be able to stick to all the basic normal deadlines. Also, make sure you guys are making your quarterly estimates. I have had a number of people that, for some reason, this last year, it just seemed like they were making them and now they kind of stopped, maybe because income had changed, sources had changed. It's important because the penalties you get for not paying, it used to be not so bad. Interest at the IRS used to be about 7%, which a lot of people were making that in investments. Now it's almost 12% interest. Penalties, of course, start at 5% per a month, maximizing on most of them at 25%. And then they charge interest on penalties as well. So 12% interest is pretty high, guys. And then the penalties on top of it, I mean, easily you can have, you know, $5,000-$6,000 be added to your bill before you even know it. So again, make sure if you're making your quarterlies, all we have to do is pay 100% of the year before, basically, or 110 to completely eliminate all penalties. And then if you still owe money, so if you owe $20,000 in 2023 and you pay in, you know, $23,000 or whatever for 2024, but yet you owed $40,000, there's not going to be a penalty for the difference as long as you pay that by the due date. But that's the kind of thing you want to do. And then if you overpay, well, then you can either get it back as a refund or roll the money over into the next year, which is what most of us do. So that way you can actually reduce your estimates for the next year, right? So if you overpay 1 year, just roll it to the next and then you don't have to pay, you know, as much out. IRS already has your money, which, you know, anytime you're self-employed, I don't care what anyone else thinks. I personally think there's a partner in my business and it is the Internal Revenue Service. They can be often very silent, which is the way I like them, but otherwise they can be quite boisterous if you don't treat them the way they feel the bylaws should say. So again, if you have questions, you can join the show, 615-737-9986. I'm Dr. Friday. I'm an enrolled agent licensed with the Internal Revenue Service to do taxes and representation. So if you've got tax questions or maybe you have something coming down the line that could affect your taxes, this is the show you want to call in. We're going to take our first break. When we get back, we can get to some of your phone calls or you can email friday@drfriday.com and I'll go through the email bag. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty, we are back here live in studio. And if you've got a question, again, the phone lines are open, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. Did get a question through the email bag, and it was a great question. I've had a couple people this year, for some reason, unclaimed property that you can go online, you can see if maybe you had an old paycheck or some stocks or a person that they had a 401k that they forgot about. And so anyways, if you go in there, the state and the federal, I believe both have places where you can look and then you can get that money back. But the question she had asked, which was good, was, is it taxable or would it be taxable to her father? And in my experience, it really depends on what it is. For example, the gentleman that had a 401k that was lost and then they put the money with the state, he did receive a 1099-R showing it as fully taxable income. The person that we had this just recently, a gentleman had like four or five stocks, little stocks, but when it came out, it's a couple $100 and they had sent him 1099-Bs, just like a regular stock. So, and they showed the sale price. And of course, we had no cost basis on any of these because he didn't remember buying them. He didn't know if they may have been given to him because he had worked for some of these companies and they may have been just part of his job. And so he didn't remember them. So we had a zero basis. So he had to pay tax on a couple $100 worth of stock that probably or may have actually been a loss as far as we know. So those things kind of come out in the how they come to you. But again, I've had people that had bank accounts or banks that closed and, you know, that became non-taxable income. So that was a good thing. All right. Well, it looks like we have Mike on the line from Nashville. Let's see if we can get Mike live here and see if I can help him out. Hey, Mike, what's happening?
Okay, I've got a question about paying taxes on a house that I sold.
Okay.
And I've got I'm also on Social Security, so I'm trying to figure out if the sale of this house c- because I've lived in it, you know, for about 10 years.
Okay, so it's your primary home, or was your primary home?
Yeah, it was my primary house. So I've sold it, and I'm wondering if I need to pay taxes on it because it was less than $500,000, and I'm married.
Well, let me ask, are you married, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, and did both of you live in there at least the last 2 years?
Well, I did. I just got married about a year and a half ago.
Okay, so
and now I'm living in her house, and I've sold my primary house.
All right, so theoretically, 2 out of 5 years, she had to have lived in there to qualify for the 100% of it. But I don't know if we need all of that. Anyways, how much did you pay for the house back 10 years ago or whatever?
It's about 125.
Okay, and what did you sell it for?
I sold it for 340.
Okay, so 255, 7370. We wouldn't even need her exclusion because you would get a 250,000 plus your basis, which gives it 375. So there's no tax on this house sale.
Okay. The other question that's combined with that is I'm on Social Security. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know I had trouble when I got married because they wanted to charge me extra. I think it was IRMAA or something.
It's called IRMA, but yes, I know exactly what, for your Medicare side.
Okay, so the question I've got is that going to count? Is the sale of that house going to mean I'm going to have to pay more on my Social Security in a couple of years?
It should not.
Or not?
It should not. It only affects when it affects your tax return. Since this is going to show up as a zero on your tax return, okay, filing jointly or singly, I mean, theoretically, if all you have is Social Security in this home sale, there'd be no tax return required. In essence, I would suggest filing because they don't know it's your primary unless you tell them sometimes.
Right.
But anyways, no, this should not affect your IRMA. Now, you know, again, depending on your guys's joint income, I want to say IRMA is like 200,000 for married, 100,000 for individuals.
Okay.
Right around that dollar amount. So as long as you guys are under that, you'll be fine.
Okay, so
and
that's
the house,
so I really don't need to send any like quarterly payment in on taxes because I won't have any.
Exactly. The only thing is, okay, being that you're married, your Social Security could become taxable because of the joint income.
Okay.
So, you know,
all
you
right,
might want to consider that, but you're otherwise you're in good shape.
Okay, thank you. I heard you talking about that. I just wanted to clarify it before the end of the quarter here.
Exactly. Smart man. Just to make sure, you know, because you don't want to then later come up and say, oh, my gosh, I owe $10,000 or something that wasn't prepared.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
No worries, mate. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. All right. That was a great question. And so if you do have questions like that, you can certainly join the show at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. So there are some exceptions to the moving out 2 out of 5 year situation. Usually it only has to do with health or jobs, but sometimes you can, or divorce. I have had several divorces where people have purchased homes and not made it the full 2 years, but had to sell because of the divorce. And there are some exclusions in there. They'll give you a day-to-day calculation and maybe not all of the 250, but depending on how close you are to the 2 year mark, they'll give you a portion of that, which will help you not pay capital gains on a house like that. So anyway, so make sure you talk to a tax expert. If you do have extenuating circumstances, Mike won't have to worry about it. But primary homes are great. I mean, as far as being able to do the 2 out of 5 year situation. But if you have one of the things Mike brought up, which is also something I think a lot of people forget or don't even know really exists until they end up having to pay on it, which is IRMA, which is, I don't know, I probably can figure out, but what it stands for. But bottom line is, they means test Medicare. So if you're an individual that's over 65 or 65 and older, then you are now on Medicare most likely. And so your income now is going to affect. You think, okay, well, Medicare's Medicare. That's what I would have thought until later. And then I found out that Medicare isn't Medicare. Medicare is tested based on how much money you make. So if you were to have a one-time situation, and I've heard different things. There's supposedly a one-time exclusion, but I heard someone from the Medicare office physically say to one of my clients that it has to be a life-changing experience. For example, you now have retired, not just a one-time situation. But Bottom line is, if you make over $100,000, be it from a sale or your RMDs or anything you have, Social Security 100% is added to that. All of that, if you make over $100,000, they're going to start charging you more than the standard tax or the standard Medicare fees. And it jumps up every $50,000 or so after that. And I believe there's no marriage penalty, so I think it doubles. But it's important to know, if you're making a decision to convert or to sell something, how is that going to affect your IRMA? Maybe a question you need to ask. Hey, Peggy in Watertown. Hey, Peg, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon. We have a farm, and we are planning to sell 15 acres off of it. And we want to know what, are we going to have to reinvest that money within a certain amount of time to avoid taxes, or what? We are both retired on Social Security.
So is the farm your primary residence?
Yes,
usually they take 5 acres in the home, but how big is the farm?
Well, it's 50 acres, but we're selling 15 acres.
Right.
Not the house. Not the house.
Right. You're keeping the house. You're just selling the dirt right now. It sounds like just selling off 15 acres. So the tax law for this is, it's not going to fall under primary home because it's not the 5 acres and the house. You're just selling off a portion of the extenuating dirt that you have, or farmland, whatever the proper term is. So you have two options. You can do a 1031 exchange, in which you would take those monies, and I believe you have 90 days and then a little bit more if you have to finance or whatever, to buy like kind, which would be either any type of real estate. You could do commercial, rental, whatever. Cannot buy a primary home. Or you pay tax. So the question would be is a like kind even going to be good for what you're looking at? Because you're retired. Are you looking to get into real estate as a secondary investment, or is... not really.
Well, we thought possibly a vacation home.
Okay.
In another state. Yeah.
Well, that would be great. As long as it's a vacation rental, you can go spend a couple weeks there or whatever. There's different criteria. Right. You can do what you need. But that would be a viable, just a lot of times with people, as we all get older, sometimes we try to simplify life, and getting rentals is not always. But an Airbnb version of that at a rental, a lot of those places handle everything for you anyways. But you would want to look and have that kind of pre-set up, so you know, because what happens is it gives a 1031, so it just goes into escrow, and then you would close on the rental once you closed on the dirt or on the acreage sale. That would be the easiest way to do that. So you kind of know what you want to do with it before, because it's a very short window. 90 days is pretty short to give them the property that you're wanting to close on. So it'd be good to have it in advance, so you know what you want to do. It's less stressful. But yeah, you can do that. Right. And that way there would be no taxes.
So would we have to reinvest the whole amount that we make on that property?
So let's say you sell it for $150,000, just as a number. Let's just say you sell it for $150,000. Right. You have to go spend $150,000.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Okay. That answers my question. All right.
Thanks for the phone call. Great phone call. Thanks, Peggy.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. And when we get back, you can join us live here on the radio at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986, or you can email Friday at drfriday.com. I realize it is a hot Saturday out there, so you may or may not be sitting and listening to the radio. Maybe you're driving or whatever, but if you want to join the show again, 615-737-9986, and we're going to be right back with the Dr. Friday Show.
For existing essential and standard customers.
All righty, we are back here live in Beacon. And if you want to join the show, you can. 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986. Live here in studio. And we are lucky enough to have Elizabeth on the line. So let's get her on the phone. Hey, Elizabeth, what's happening?
Hello. I was needing to know if I have to pay taxes on an inherited house for my mother's that I sold.
Well, when did you inherit it?
She passed away. No, she passed away November of the year before last, and it was sold this year.
All right. So here's the answer to that. Whatever the house was worth November of 22, it sounded like, year before last, it may have been 23. I don't know. Whatever she passed away, Elizabeth, whatever the house was worth is what your basis is. So if you sold it for more than it was worth back in November, then you would pay capital gains. If you sold it for less, then you would not. Does that help?
Okay, so it was valued at $500,000 according to the real estate people the month that she passed away, and it was sold for $462,000. So I guess the answer is no, it won't have to be paid.
You got it.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too, sweetheart. Bye-bye. All right, and that's a great question. Again, often have... I mean, when people pass away, it's always great when you can inherit residence right now or homes or real estate because of this step up in basis that we get to claim. It is on the table. I know Biden is trying to eliminate that particular inheritance situation because of the fact that it is obviously costing the government a lot of money, because if mom and dad paid $10,000 50 years ago, and now we sell it and we don't have to pay any gains, and mom and dad would have had to, or they would have had at least a smaller exclusion, it changes the whole tax law. So the problem with that is none of us know what mom and dad pay for properties. Most people, you're lucky if you can truly find the original documentation where it was purchased or owned. But you know, if the case comes down where we have to find out what the original amount is, then that's going to be really hard for most of us. I'm going to be honest. You're going to have a very difficult time trying to find out what the original purchase price, because in my family, at least many of them, was land that they inherited and then they built a home on it after or whatever. And so you've got generational situations, people that built their own home. So there was no original dollar amount. So you could either go to property taxes, but we all know how those aren't necessarily correct, because look at my own property tax. I mean, it's not what I paid for the house, what the property tax says it's valued at now. So where exactly do we go with that? So right now they basically still have, and I think they'll continue at least with that step up in basis. All right, let's see here. It looks like William was on first. So let's hit William. Hey, William, what's happening?
Thank you for taking my call. My question is this. We are retired. We're in our late 70s.
Okay.
I don't generate income from a W-2.
Right.
I have a corporation I've had for 30 years. We take dividends because of the tax advantage. Right. However, my question is this. Could I take a fee, a director's fee or something, where I'm getting a 1099, and could I make a contribution to our IRAs?
It has to be earnings, but if you can certainly do something, I mean, if you've been in this company, I'm sure you could justify your time. In any earnings right now, age does not apply. So yes, and answer your question, the basic answer is yes. If you have earnings, that earnings can then be converted into IRA or SEP or Roth IRA, whatever you're, you know, I'm not a financial planner, but any of that basic situation.
Now, I take dividends, but
But dividends is not earnings, as you know. That is that's an investment. So it'd have to come through W-2 or 1099.
Okay. And I can go 75 max?
75 max for each of you. And you can contribute for your wife.
All right.
I think you're married.
We are, but we both own the company. So we both could take a director's fee or whatever, 1099.
Yep. And if it's a 1099, you have to back out the Social Security that you'll still end up paying on that, because as you know, it only washes earnings for earnings. So you might want to distribute $8,000 to get to 75 if you're putting 75 in.
Oh, okay. Okay. Take more than that to make the difference.
To offset the difference. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. Great phone call. Thanks, William. All right. Let's hit Jeff real quick.
Well, hello, Mr. Jeff.
Hello.
Yes, I've been down under, but I didn't pay taxes down there. Now, I have a couple of acres in Georgia that's unimproved land.
Okay.
And I live with my father, take care of him, and rent my house out for $900 a month. But I live on a VA disability check.
Okay.
Now, if I will be the inheritor of his property when he's gone.
Okay.
And the question is, if I sell the property in Georgia and I spend that money on improvements or repairs to his property, do I have to pay taxes on it?
Yep. Yeah, they eliminated the reinvestment situation. So you would either have to have lived in the house, and I don't know when this all happened, but if it's still your primary, meaning you lived in it two out of the last 5 years, so you could have had it as a rental for the last 2.5 years, and before that you lived in it, you would still qualify for the exclusion on the primary home.
Well, but the property in Georgia is unimproved land.
Okay, but you said you have a home that you were going to sell.
No. I want to sell the unimproved land.
Oh,
I'm going to continue to rent out my house. I live with my father now, and my house is next door to him.
Totally sorry. Okay, so the unimproved, yes, you would qualify for that, would be what's called a 1031 exchange, if you want to not pay. But you can't, again, you can't sell that and make improvements on your home or your father's home.
Well, the thing is, his house needs a roof, and the only way we can afford it is for me to sell that land.
So you're going to have to sell it, pay taxes, and then fix the roof.
Yeah, I don't like that. I haven't paid taxes since 2011.
I'm not saying it's the best plan. I'm just telling you how it's going to shake down. Yeah, there's no way of avoiding, hopefully you'll make a nice profit on it. Is it in your name, Jeff, just out of curiosity, jointly with you and your father, or how's it titled?
No, the property in Georgia is just in my name.
Okay, all right. But you're on disability, correct?
Correct.
So you do have to be careful when you do something like that. If it's a big enough sale, it could mess up your disability.
Okay. Now here's another question on the same property. It's 2 acres and there was an old falling apart house on it when I bought it. I bought it to put an RV on to live for a few months because I had no place to go. And what I paid for the property was $4,000 in cash plus a Harley Davidson.
Okay.
So,
did you have a basic value on that Harley?
I don't. It was at the time it was a 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That 6 year old Harley Sportster that I bought new.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that they said, okay, you know what? I'll take the Harley and this, and it's basically 10 grand, and I'm going to count it as that. I mean, there's a value there somehow. You'd have to come back into to deal with that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the previous owner and I kind of sort of halfway agreed on the Harley was $4,000 and then the $4,000 in cash, so $8,000.
So you paid $8,000 roughly for the property, and what's it worth today?
Well, I'm paying taxes on about $9,000.
Oh, okay. So theoretically, you're looking at paying tax, which at your income would be zero for a profit of $1,000. You're under $50,000, so capital gains has a zero capital gains rate because you've owned it for over a year, so you could sell it for $25,000, theoretically, depending on how much you get for disability and all that, but I'm just saying you'd be at zero tax.
I don't get much in disability. I get like $1,300 and something a month, so it's impossible to live on it. And then $900 on the rental, so I'm making about $2,250 a month total.
Okay. So as long as your overall income is under $50,000, including whatever the capital gains would be on this, then you'd pay zero tax on that capital gains.
Oh, it would be way under that.
So it doesn't sound like to me it should be a problem for you.
Okay. I just wanted to check with you. I've never called you. I visited down under, and you're the only one from down under that I ever listened to.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it.
Tell me one thing, even while we're still in there, where are you from down under?
Armadale, about 70 kilometers north of Sydney.
Okay, well, we pulled into, I just forgot. somewhere on the East Coast. We visited it when I was playing the news.
Gotcha.
It's good to meet you, even if it is on the radio.
Thanks. Appreciate you, Jeff. All right, let's see if we can get Elizabeth back in really quick before we hit the break. Hey, Elizabeth, what can I do for you?
Sorry to bother you again. I needed to ask, do you have to pay tax on inheritance from checking and savings account money?
No. The only thing that usually happens is any interest that's been earned would be taxable, but the money that's in the bank is already assumed to have been taxed.
Okay. And then one more question. Does the money have to be re-spent in a certain amount of time?
If you sell the acreage?
Taxes on it?
Are you talking the land sale?
Yes.
Okay, yes. It's called a 1031 exchange, so you have a limited window, about 90 days, to list the property that you want to exchange the property that you sold for to the new property. So there is a very small window that you have to actually find the property that you want to buy once you sell the property that you're selling.
Okay, but since I don't want to buy any property, what will I have to do?
Then you pay tax. I mean, whatever the difference between, we'd have to come up with the basis because you paid so much for the 50 acres in the home. And then whatever the difference is, you just pay either 15 or up to 23% tax. I don't know your income bracket or anything about it, but we could, so if you need help, you can call me.
Even though that was inherited, I'd still have to pay the tax on it.
Wait. Maybe I'm getting the subperson. You have an inherited, this is the home you inherited from your mother?
Correct.
I'm so sorry. So this one you said was like $462,000 was the value?
Right, but it was split between me and my sister, so I only got like $230,000.
Okay, but how much was it valued at the time that mom passed away?
$500,000.
Okay, so there's nothing on that one. That's all zero. You don't have to do anything with that.
So even though I'm not just put it in the bank, it won't cost taxes or nothing?
That's correct. The only thing, you'll just go earn some interest. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much. I love listening to your show every week.
Thank you. I appreciate it. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get to Jake and anyone else that wants to join the show at 615-737-9986. We'll be right back.
Services, planning, business, and IRS negotiation. Visit drfriday.com.
Alrighty, we are back here live in studio. We've got a few people waiting on the show. So we're going to wade right in with Jake that's waited all the way through the break. So let's see what we have. Jake, what can I do for you, sweetheart?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I was wondering if you have a home that you live in and you sell it for, say you sell it for $250,000, and I'm on disability and my wife's on Social Security, will they allow you to keep that money you receive from the sale of that home, or do they expect you not to have that much in the bank, you know, disability?
Right. Well, I'm not going to claim I'm an expert at disability, but for one, you paid something for the house, even if it's just $100,000, whatever.
Right.
And I do know, there'd be no capital gains, but the answer is, my understanding is it can only keep like $3,000. A person on disability can have like $3,000 or something in the bank, and that's it. Since your wife is not on disability, I'm assuming there may be some way of doing this where, you know, the money's, you know, for her. I mean, obviously she shouldn't be penalized by what happens with the other. So, I would definitely, before I decide to do that, I would definitely try to talk to someone, and I don't have an individual myself, but someone that really knows about, because what I would hate to have was mess up your disability in getting that money, right? I mean, that's what I was trying to say, because if you sell something and I've had people that have lost their disability because they've inherited money. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume that can mess you up, but it's your own home that you're selling. So I'm thinking that you might have some sort of a safety or exclusion, Jake, but I would definitely do a little research before I did it. I'm not helping. I can tell you it's tax-free, but that doesn't help your answer. Sorry, I don't know the exact answer on that one.
It's sad to say when you're down, they keep you down. I'll put it that way.
No, I hear you, buddy. I know it doesn't seem to be a win-win situation, but thank you. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for your help. Bye.
Thanks. All right. That's it. Brian, he's got a tax question. Hey, Brian, what's happening?
Hey, Dr. Friday. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. So I've got a 401k. It's a Roth 401k that I've been investing in for some time for a company that I'm currently leaving. The new company I'm going to has a 401k plan that I could roll it into, but they don't match it. So I've decided to take those funds out, just take an early disbursement. And from what I've read, you have to pay, I think, 20% on what your earnings were, but not your contributions, and then a 10% penalty when I have to file taxes. Is that correct?
Right. Well, depending, the 20% would depend on your tax bracket, right? But the 10% is the early withdrawal penalty, and then whatever your tax rate being, probably averaging 20 sounds about right, then you'll pay on just the gains. The investment, you had already paid tax on when it went in, so you don't have to pay tax on it coming out.
So when they were saying that when they go to give me the disbursement, they will hold the taxes out. Does that sound right?
Yes, and that's where the 20%, because I think there's like a mandate on the federal tax law that tells them they have to withhold 20%. And then, you know, and as long as your tax bracket fits that, then we're fine with that. If you need a little bit more, though, because if they're taking 20 plus 10, that would be 30%, which would be fine. But a lot of times they'll only take 20, which would mean 10% penalty plus 10 for federal. And that might be a little shy if your income bracket is over $50,000.
So I would just need to basically, once they take the 20% out, keep 10% back out of whatever.
That's a smart man. Yep, that's what I like. Yes, good plan.
And then we'll pay our other taxes as normal.
Yep.
Add that 10% to it.
Perfect.
All right. Perfect. Thank you so much for your help.
No problem. Thanks. All right. Well, we'll try Valerie. Hopefully, we can make it if she can talk fast. Hey, Val.
Hi, Dr. Friday. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask basically if I have to pay taxes on an inherited amount of money from my mom with the sale of her house. So basically, I was her power of attorney. The month-long process eventually led to the house sale. The house was sold, and then unfortunately, a few days later, my mom passed away, and basically Medicaid has already cleared everything with nothing needed to be paid to them. With some of that money from her house sale, her remaining debts were paid with her, like even after her passing, her remaining debts were paid. And so that leaves X amount of dollars with the proceeds. And I didn't know if taxes need to be paid.
So Val, yours is a little different because the house sold prior to your mom's passing. So this would actually be on her personal tax return. So she would fall under that personal exclusion. Let's just say mom brought the house for 100 and it sold for 200. She would be zero tax to mom, whatever's left in the bank, because that's what you're inheriting is the money in the bank, theoretically. And so the tax burden is on mom's personal tax return, not on the estate. As long as whatever mom paid for the house plus $250,000 added on top of whatever she paid, as long as the house sold for less than that, there's no tax to mom. Therefore, no tax to the estate. Does that make sense?
Okay. I believe so.
Yeah. So if you need more help, you can always call me Monday or whatever and we can talk. I know it's on the radio, it's a little hard. Just the biggest thing is you just need to get the number, find out how much mom paid for the house, and then we can work from there. You know how much it sold for, but that would have to fall on her personal tax return. And then the fact that you paid everything off or whatever would be outside of the tax law. So that would be your big thing.
With the tax collection.
Okay, I really appreciate that. And yeah, definitely might call you more in depth to talk about it. But I thank you so much. I believe that makes sense, though. So I really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right. And unfortunately, we're going to be taking a quick, the show quits in about a minute and a half, so I can't get to Joe. But Joe, if you want, you can call either my office on Monday at 615-367-0819. Again, 615-367-0819. Or you can email me your question at friday@drfriday.com. Again, friday@drfriday.com. But if you have tax problems, maybe you're dealing with love letters coming in the mail, not sure exactly how to move forward, what you're going to need to do, then you you can give our office a call. We're an, I'm an enrolled agent licensed by the Internal Revenue Service, been doing this for about 25 plus years. So if you need help figuring out what's the best plan, just calling one of those companies you hear, I know, on the radio, but you need to be able to do a face-to-face. You need to know who's helping you, and you need to understand what your choices are. Don't just pick up the phone, and then the first thing they always tell you, I think it's amazing, is, oh, sure, we can help you. You need to pay a said dollar amount. And it's often based on how much money you owe the IRS at the time. Sometimes you don't even owe that money to the IRS. So you need to make sure you're dealing with someone that's going to help you get through this. And if you need help with that, again, you can call our office on Monday morning at 615-367-0819, 615-367-0819. You can also check us out on the web at drfriday.com. That's drfriday.com. Or you can email Friday@drfriday.com. As an enrolled agent, we are licensed by the Internal Revenue Service to do taxes and representation. That is all we do. We do tax preparation and we do representation. Well, I shouldn't say that. We also do bookkeeping. My brother handles that part of the business. But if you need help and you're a small business owner and you're trying to get into, we're certified QuickBooks advisors, so we can help you also get your QuickBooks going. And then you have the good information to give to me to do your taxes. See how it works? But if you do need help dealing with the love letters or payroll issues or just getting your taxes in line and just making sure you're on track, you can call my office, 615-367-0819, or Friday@drfriday.com. Totally hope you're enjoying this Saturday. And as we say in Australia, copulator.